outdoors, coming on the airwaves, coming your way.
Hey now, we're outside indoors, beat on a book on a snowy day.
Hey now, we're inside outdoors, baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Inside Outdoors is brought to you from the beautiful rolling hills, forests, and lakes of southern Indiana. Produced in Bloomington and brought to you live every Saturday morning at 7 a.m. right here on your local community radio station, WFHB. Inside Outdoors features hosts Don Jordan, Buddy Bill Moser, and Rich Reardon, and gives you everything you need to know about the outdoors surrounding our local community, our state, and around our nation. With fishing, hunting, local and national outdoor news, the environment, natural resources, safety, issues in our community, and just down-home family fun, our goal is to inspire how to be a good steward of our precious natural resources. You can call into our show at 812-323-1200 and ask a question or tell us what's on your mind. So sit right back, get a cup of coffee, journey with us into the lakes and woods, and find out what our natural resources have to offer. If you miss the show, you can listen online at WFHB.org. Just go to the public affairs listing, and you'll find a podcast of our show at Inside Outdoors. This is WFHB Bloomington, Indiana, volunteer-powered community radio at 91.3 FM for South Central Indiana, also 98.1 in Bloomington, 100.7 in Brown County, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at WFHB.org.
Good morning, everybody. This is Inside Outdoors, and this is Don Jordan here, and I'm here with my buddies Rich Reardon. Say hi, Rich.
Hello, hello.
And Alan Bronenberg. Say hi,
hey guys.
Alan.
Good afternoon. Good morning.
Yeah, whatever time of day it is, wherever you are. We hope you're having a good time. And hello to Mrs. Calabash, wherever you are. Anyway.
Not too many people probably remember that anymore, but I do.
Well, yeah, Jimmy Durante.
Yeah.
Well, Joe and I were watching Esther Williams movies, and there was one that features Jimmy Durante. He has almost a bigger part than Esther Williams does. And anyway, it was...
I suspect for a number of years, he may have actually been more popular than Esther Williams.
Yeah, it was near the end of Esther's career, you know,
yeah.
In 1947, and she started out in 1940.
Oh, man.
She had already done Fernando Lamas and all those guys.
Yeah.
Anyway.
The war years, yeah.
Jimmy Durante.
Well, let me get started with some outdoor news, which is our lake level. And I thought this was kind of interesting. I looked into it a little bit, but we were 6 feet above normal a month ago, which is, I don't know what you guys' record is, but that's pretty high for me. I can't remember much being... higher than that.
It's been 15.
Really has been?
Yeah.
Well, that was pretty 15. High anyway then.
Right now, I think it goes over the spillway at like 22 feet, doesn't it?
Something like
that. I don't recall the exact number. Yeah. 15 is pretty damn high.
Yeah.
It's pretty high.
Well, anyway, it's 539.8 right now, and the temperature is 61.5.
And 539 is a foot over?
About a foot. A little bit. Well, it's... 0.8, so it's almost 2 feet over, and that's quick because it was only normal pool, which is 538 last week. But
well, they've been letting water out, according to the people I've heard from.
Well, there must be some coming in for it to go up in a week.
Well, they think there's a lot of rain in the forecast.
There has been a lot of rain, yeah.
And you know, they have to let it out to hold it back to appease the folks downstream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're at the top in Indiana anyway. We got Salamone and Mississinawa, I guess.
And I thought
My driveway was flooded here
was it?
A few days ago. Yeah. So there had to be a lot of water going into the lake.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, I noticed some washing taking place on my land here too. And it was overnight. So I didn't, I never heard it rain real hard or anything, you know, and I was surprised in the morning to see that it had rained pretty hard, apparently. So, anyway.
Well, you know, what was surprising to me is the other day, you know, we had a cat die, and I went out to bury it. And this was before the rain, though. This was when the ground was visibly powdery dry on top. I got down about 18 inches, and it was wet down there.
Really?
So there was a lot more, a lot more water down below the surface than I ever thought there would be. I mean, it was almost muddy. It was.
You
muddy
live up on top of the hill, don't you?
Yeah. Hmm. Everything runs off here.
Yeah.
So I was really surprised by that. So I thought it'd be, you know, dry and hard pan, and I'd have to get the pickaxe out and, you know, work on the dirt that way. But no, it, I dug right down, and it was soft and wet.
Well, we planted magnolia or magnolias. We planted marigolds today. Yeah. And the dirt was surprisingly workable and not as wet as I expected it to be, but it was just about perfect for planting flowers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I bet it was.
Today. And so we bought a lot of them. And there's a shortage of marigolds. Have you heard? Do you know about that?
No.
Not really.
Marigold. Now, all of the, let's see, Menards, Lowe's, Rural King, and I don't go to that other big box store anymore that you know of.
We do.
Were either out of marigolds or had just a few scrawny specimens remaining. And my wife called around, and she found like they had three up in Martinsville, I believe, you said.
Oh, wow. Right,
up in Martinsville. And it's so-and-so here and so-and-so there. So, I have to tell you now. Well, I sort of broke my pledge. I drove Joe to Walmart.
Yeah.
And I stayed in the truck.
Technically, you're okay, Don.
Lee, you think technically you're all right.
Technically, you're okay. Yeah.
And, well, it's not over yet. She went in and got the marigolds, and as we were driving out, I'd lived up to my godly pledge.
Yeah.
And we passed the outside of the garden center, and here are lines and lines of potted azaleas.
Oh, wow.
In three, four different colors. And our azaleas this year were just so spectacular, and they had that color. So let's see, we ended up with 9 azaleas.
Wow.
9. Count them, 9. Hmm. That's 9 holes that have to be dug. I'm sure Joe's looking forward to doing that.
Well, you know what they used to say on The Sopranos?
Pretty
just when I thought. Just when I thought I was out, they bring me back in.
I thought you were going to say big arms, pretty woman.
Well, okay. Okay, yeah, well, that too.
Okay.
That's funny. Boy. You know, a week or two ago, there were no tomato plants anywhere in Bloomington. So I know a few people that were looking, and I think Mrs. B was looking for some more to fill out the garden here, and they couldn't find a one anywhere.
Well, we were happened to be at Rural King when they came rolling in there.
Oh boy.
So lucky. We got our tomatoes mostly at Rural King this time.
Yeah.
And I got to give you the, wish Bill here was here. He could tell us what he had. I got Early Girls, Better Boy, Beefsteak, and orange and red cherry tomatoes.
Oh, there you go.
So,
you won't go wrong there.
We've had really great luck with those Early Girls because of this blight thing. That
exactly.
We find that getting a plant that grows fast and gets it over with and makes some production before middle of July, you're better off.
Right.
No question. That's the problem with those beefsteaks is, it takes so long to get big enough, usually by then either cutworms or some kind of blight's gotten to them.
Yeah. That's what's going on with that.
I do know what Bill has some of because I got him some seeds, and that's the ox heart.
Oh, yeah. I remember Matt talking about that.
Yeah. I got him some seeds that I they were kind of out of them everywhere too. He couldn't find any, and
yeah.
Are you still growing tomatoes?
We got some.
Well, I mean your production.
Oh yeah, they're doing it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
What kind of tomatoes do they produce? Do you know?
Just about everything, because he has all those exotic ones that he sells. He sells the seeds, so it's not so much to grow the tomato; it's to get the seeds.
I see.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Although we do have the ones we like, we've got on one side of the garden.
Which ones do you like?
Well, I like, you know, pretty much your basic big old red juicy ones. So I like the beef steaks and, you know, I don't like these little crazy ones that he's got, you know, some of them are brown and red and they're in all kinds of weird shapes and sizes. And I don't see much flavor in a lot of those. Some people like them, but I don't.
Well, those colors come from the originals, you know, they somehow back bred and stuff, but they cross a Cherokee purple or something like that with a Better Boy, you know.
Yeah.
Listen, I'll tell you what, Cherokee purple is our favorite here.
I
keep those all day long. Yeah, that's my favorite. And Victoria usually grows a ton of those. And, you know, she was putting out, you know, like a half a dozen cherry tomato plants. And, like, God, there's like 4 million little tomatoes on them. We couldn't eat them all. So we kind of cut back a little bit this year to kind of right size our appetites with actually the food that we have. So,
well, you probably know this, but most of those, what they call heirlooms, varieties that like the purple Cherokee and whatnot, those are descendants of the original tomatoes. Hmm. Which do you know where they arose? Do you know where they came from?
Mrs. B probably knows that. I do not.
I'm sorry. Ukraine. They're from the Ukraine, and most of them were dark colored, and they were all viney. So a lot of the breeding that's been done has been to get them to be a bush instead of a vine, but they still want to be a vine, as you noticed.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. And, I did not know that. That's fascinating.
They're from Russia. They have a little different taste than the ones we've developed here. And also the guy who hybridized the Big Boy tomato, which was the Burpee giant killer, you know, I mean, the most popular tomato of all time, was from IU.
Hmm. Oh, so you know, I think I did know that.
I wrote a column about it many years ago.
And, that's probably what I knew about it.
Yeah, maybe. Some of his descendants are still around here. And although he went on to fame and fortune with Burpee.
Sure.
I can't remember his name, but that's not too bad.
I remember one time, for some reason or another, we were, you know, we get 14 million seed catalogs a year because, you know, the girls, you know, order from everywhere. I remember one time we were getting like 5 or 6 Burpee catalogs a year. It's like the mailbox would just be full of them. The next day there'd be another one in there.
Yeah, it's kind of like getting spam on your computer.
It was a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
I have a little outdoor story. A couple days ago, I hadn't driven my truck in a really long time, and the battery was low, so I put it on a charger, and I decided after I was done that I'd take it for a ride into town and back out to Judah. And, man, I had the windows open, and the fragrance of whatever flowers, or what, I don't know whether it was the trees.
Russian olives.
Oh, my gosh, it was everywhere. And it was so strong. I don't remember ever really remembering the entire environment smelling like a flower, but it was quite amazing.
In our neighborhood out here, and then all the way over to Judah, all the roads are lined with those Russian olives. And for some reason or another, they just exploded this year. I've never seen so many blossoms on those Russian olives, but boy, you drive with the windows down and it, the perfume will fill your vehicle.
Yeah, absolutely. I figured, you know, I would just drove by something and I kept going, well, I still smell it. And it was everywhere.
It is.
Yeah. Interesting. Well,
lovely scent.
My scent story would be one of the places I lived in Florida. I had a 8 foot tall gardenia.
Hmm. Oh my. Oh, wow.
About 10 feet from the bedroom window.
Oh yeah. My.
I want to tell you.
Better than that. Jeez.
Oh man, it would actually wake me up at night.
I'll bet.
When it was blooming, it was just overwhelming fragrance. Yeah. Never smelled anything like it. And because of that, I went out and bought a record album from some Cuban guys because it had a song on it, Dos Gardenias Por Aquí.
I love it.
Two gardenias.
Well, you know what inspired somebody to write a song about it, so it has to be pretty spectacular.
Oh, yeah. It's, well, that's it.
I mean, I don't know of any Russian olive songs, so, you know, I think the gardenias got that beat.
No, we know a lutefisk song.
Yeah.
I don't think we've ever taught Alan the lutefisk song. We'll have to practice up on that someday.
Absolutely.
We will.
Absolutely do that. Oh, speaking of lutefisk, because it reminds me of Montana for some reason. There was a black bear attack in near Durango, Colorado, this week. I mentioned it. My wife saw the article about it, but they're very rare. You know, black bear attacks don't happen very often.
Right.
And I guess in this case, according to what I heard, the bear, well, I guess they didn't really know how it happened, did they, Joe? They found her. She was walking her dog, and the bear got her.
That was a woman? Oh, my.
Yeah. Dead and partially eaten.
Oh, boy, that's terrible.
Oh, my God.
Right? So, you know, when a black, she had two cubs with her.
Oh, there you go.
Well, that pretty much explains it right there, doesn't it?
Yep.
You get a yappy little dog and a couple of cubs with a mom, and that's probably not going to end up well.
Right.
Not good. But that's I think one of the stats that was in that story said that there were only 9 black bear attacks in the United States all of last year.
Yeah.
Of course, that may have been skewed by COVID virus, people not being in the parks, whatnot. I don't know. But anyway, there's the bear attack story. That's the first one I've heard. The snow's not even out of the pass. And here we got a bear attack story. And Durango, that's up in the mountains, isn't it, Rich? Kind of.
Actually, I mean, it's farly south comparatively to what you might think of as most of the big mountains. But there's mountains all around. There's 14,000 foot peaks not too far away. So,
It's I know there's trout fishing the San Juan River and then southwest of there's several good trout streams.
Yeah,
which I have yet to explore, but would like to.
I mean, everywhere it's we've intruded very successfully into all wildlife environments. So it's, I'm not surprised at all. Anytime I hear somebody brushing up against a wolf or a coyote or a bear or something like that. I mean, it's, we've put ourselves kind of right in their favorite spots.
Right.
We're in their home.
Yep.
And squeezing them.
Squeezing like crazy.
Well, and getting back to our own neck of the woods, I wanted to mention another interesting thing, not interesting, but something that's going on, and we didn't really talk about it yet, I think, with Don. Maybe we mentioned it, you and me, Alan, last week, but they've been stealing catalytic converters from all over the lake, apparently, and, people coming back from fishing and finding out their catalytic's been sawed off.
Yeah.
So
I heard it mentioned that Cutright was a prime point of this taking place.
A bunch of them happened there. Yeah.
Well, that's fairly isolated.
It's isolated, and you don't have to pay an entry fee, and you can get back out on the highway and go either way pretty quickly. So that doesn't surprise me at all.
No, that would be the place. Of course, Morris Creek.
Yep.
Would also be a good spot.
Yeah.
The one down by you, you might end up in the lake there.
if you're not careful. if you're trying to hurry, you might want to put your parking brake on while you're sawing off that catalytic converter.
Yeah, that's right.
Your truck will drift right into the lake.
Well, that's always been a sign of bad times, you know, when people start stealing catalytic converters for the platinum.
Yep.
That's no easy retrieval job.
No.
And somebody has to be willing to buy them. So who's buying them? You know, I think.
Well, the junkyards are, of course. I mean, you know.
Well, the more reputable junkyards, I know, at least I had heard that J&B will not buy them.
Right.
So I don't know if that's true. I hope it is. But there's
plenty
of other junkyards around.
Oh, yeah. Listen, I have no doubt. You get your trunk full of catalytic converter platinum, and you won't have to drive very far before somebody will take it.
Yeah, that's right. What do you suppose they get for this platinum or for these converters when they take it?
I heard it was $300 or $400.
$300 or $400.
Yeah.
Wow.
Someone said it was high as 600. I kind of didn't believe that, but I believe $300 or $400 probably.
Well, probably the converter cost you to replace it a couple thousand.
Oh, easily.
Yeah. So, well, yeah, that started several years ago, and it slacked off, and then, you know, it comes back every now and then.
Yep.
It seemed to go with recessions there for a while.
But it does, and you know, I think you hit it right on the head. I think the reason that it really slowed up is because a lot of places just wouldn't take them anymore. So you take, you know, a dozen catalytic converters in for the bounty. Somebody's going to go, huh, where'd you get 12 of these? You know, right. I had 12 cars at home, do you?
I found them on the road. Yeah, some truck must have dropped them off. I was just driving down 46.
Yeah, they're all over the place down there.
Somebody's got a racket. That's what's going on.
Yeah.
Right.
There's a chop shop up in Indy that's probably full of them.
Oh, well, you know.
Lots of those.
Yeah.
Lots of those. So there is a kind of an interesting, semi-serious Indiana DNR regulation story, which you guys may or may not have seen on Facebook. Have you been following this at all? In the guide this year, the fishing rules guide, you know, that they put out, the printed one. And this is also on the internet, under bag and possession limits, it says, okay, you ready?
Yeah.
It is illegal to take more than the daily bag limit of a wild fish in a calendar day. Okay.
Right.
The possession limit is 2 times the daily bag limit. Okay. So you can have, say you got 25 crappies, you can have, go out and catch 25 more.
Yeah.
You just can't have them on the boat with you at the same time. Right.
Right.
Now, here's the trick. The possession limit does not apply to a wild fish that is processed and stored at an individual's primary residence. Let me read that to you again. The possession limit does not apply to a wild fish that is processed and stored at an individual's primary residence. So, at home, you can take those two limits that you've got for the day, clean them, put them in the freezer, and go out and keep doing that every day until you've got 1,000 fish in your freezer.
Sure.
So there is no.
I mean, how would they separate what's in your freezer from what you caught today? That's what I'm.
Well, I don't know.
How would that work?
I don't know, but I'm just shocked to see that the possession limit doesn't apply to fish you have in your freezer.
Yeah. Well, you know that something specific has happened, or that rule would not exist. Somebody has done exactly that, and you know they've come up with a law for it.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, nobody would sit around and think of that, and then say, "Hey, I think we need a law for this." You know, not ever having happened.
Well, yeah, that's. I had a couple of people respond on Facebook to this.
Mm-hmm.
This one guy says, Well, a lot of people like to have fish fries for their neighborhood, and that's why they, you know, they have to be able to have this big possession limit in their freezer, right?
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's always been one of my complaints. Why do you have to feed your entire neighborhood off of our fish?
Right.
Yeah.
Am I being greedy? I mean, I'm not taking 250 bluegills home every day.
No.
And putting them in the freezer. I mean, it's just and it's apparently legal to do this now. And you recall, I know you do, Rich, probably. I don't know whether Alan was with us yet or not, but one of our past shows, somebody had asked about buying bluegills at a grocery store up in northern Indiana someplace.
Right.
LaPorte, I think it was LaPorte.
LaPorte, yep.
And it turned out that it is perfectly legal for a fisherman to bring his bluegills in and sell them to a grocery store.
Oh, I did not know that. Is that true? See, I always understood that was not legal.
Well, that's what I always understood too.
You
cannot sell sport fish. Well,
right.
That only applies to commercial fishermen.
Oh.
You see? And I don't know how they verify that these guys that bring the fish in to sell to these grocery stores are not commercial fishermen. It sounds like they're probably selling them for money. Doesn't that make you a commercial fisherman?
Yeah, I would think that would be the very definition of it.
Right.
And encourage you to go out and do that every day. You know, pretty soon everybody's out there fishing for bluegills and crappies and anything else that people like to eat.
You know, for a long while, there was a place up in Indy on Mass Avenue called Black Market. It's out of business now. It was a tequila bar, and they had great food. They probably had the best hamburger in the state, and it was a third beef, a third pork, and a third lamb. just delicious, with goat cheese on it. But they also sold lake perch and bluegill fried, pan-fried. And I ask him one day, I'm going, where are you catching these yourself? And he goes, no, I got a guy that brings them. And I'm going, I think that's illegal, isn't it? And he goes, no. He said, no, I said, it's not illegal. But it was the only place I have ever eaten in Indiana, locally caught lake perch and bluegill on the menu.
Well,
never seen any place else.
The only place where, well, lake perch, you've been up in Northwest Indiana, I know.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, you got Tiemann's, and there used to be three big restaurants there that Lake Perch was their primary. But that was that was commercially netted.
What I thought, yeah.
Right. And those fish are disappeared, by the way, once they put the trout and salmon into Lake Michigan. After they ate all the alewives, they ate all the lake perch.
Yeah.
So anyway, you get a lake perch nowadays, they're 3-inch long fillet.
Yeah.
Just tiny little things.
Yeah, so, tiny little things. Yeah, well, is that place up in Calumet Fisheries that smokes them?
Oh, yeah. I don't know the name of it.
Yeah, I've had some fish from there that was just delicious. And supposedly all of that's locally caught. Trout, the salmon from up there. What is it? Is it coho? I can't remember.
They have coho. And they have Chinook also.
Yeah, Chinook. I think it's Chinook. But you know, they had walleye. You know, all those fish, and they were smoked and just delicious. So when you before you get ready to get on the Skyway, when you're still in Indiana, before you go over the Skyway, if you take that may actually be, I think it is 95th Street, and take it straight over to Calumet from there. It's kind of an iffy drive. I wouldn't make that drive in the nighttime, but during the day I would. But someone had bought that one time when I was in Chicago. One of the reps I had that was working, I was working with that day, had bought some the day before, and we had it for lunch that day. And I'm like, wow, I love smoked fish. And it was really good. Really
yum,
good.
Yum. I'm ready for some smoked fish.
Calumet Fisheries is the name of it.
Hmm. Yes, well, anyway, keep your freezers full if you want, I guess.
I guess so.
It seems, you know, that my it wouldn't agree with my dad's ethic, which was always take what you want, but eat what you take. Somebody eats it, I guess, when they're saving them for a neighborhood fish fry. But, I'd like to be invited.
Well, you know,
they're my fish too, aren't they? Come on, guys.
I think there's some people that probably hunt or fish for a month or two and try to get enough in their freezer for themselves for, you know, the rest of the year.
I don't want to argue with that too much if you're not.
Yeah, that's. Well, I'm not sure how many that would actually be. I'm not sure it'd be 200, but
I don't know either.
Yeah,
there'd be some.
I just wouldn't want to eat all that much fish throughout a year, you know.
Well, if you're eating fish to live on, you're overfishing in the White River. You're fishing for
that's
big
catfish.
That's
what I'm saying. Yeah.
If you want to survive on fish, that's what you got. You can't survive on bluegills.
No.
You can fish all the bluegills out of a pond, but you can't survive on them.
Yeah.
I'm just saying I wouldn't want to eat, you know, any fish that's caught in the state consistently.
Right. Any state.
Yeah.
Yeah, any state, any body of water.
Mercury in every fish tested. Every fish tested, every state, every lake.
Yep.
Right.
Let that be a warning to you.
Yeah. What a sad state of affairs we got ourselves into.
It's outrageous. It really is. And it's, you know, plastic is coming along.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't heard much about that yet, except that every sea creature caught in the Atlantic Ocean has plastic in its stomach.
Well, that's because the plastics industry has done an enormous amount of work to get that information out of the public eye.
Right.
Well,
they've spent an enormous amount of money to make sure the average Joe doesn't hear that. And if they do, they poo-poo it. And, you know, it doesn't mean anything to anybody.
Even when it does come out, you know, it's at the point now, it's like nearly impossible to get,
over. Yeah. Well, what am I going to do?
Can't get it out of the environment.
No. You know,
it's just pervasive.
Yep.
The most pervasive environmental contaminant right today is polymer.
Oh, sure. No question. Did you see the information that was on national news about a week or two ago about that giant DDT dump off the coast of California that's twice the size of Chicago?
I did see that.
Oh, my God. Think about that. And what was it? It's only a few miles from Catalina Island.
Right. It's off of California there. I remember that. There's
twice.
Still a dead zone out there.
Yeah. Twice the size of Chicago, though. It's not like somebody in the slick of the night dumped a half a dozen 55-gallon drums over and let them sink. Twice the size of Chicago. That's just extraordinary, outrageous. It's unbelievable.
Well, it just shows you what length industry will go to cover up their problems.
Oh, well, you know, when I first got to town, you know, all the PCB thing and all that from the late 70s and early 80s was, you know, in the news. And, you know, I was having breakfast at Ladyman's Southern Sporting Goods in the morning. And there was an interesting collection of people that always came in there. One of them was an old fellow who used to drive a truck. And it was an old water truck, you know, because Bloomington was, you know, short of water, and a lot of people had water hauled to their cisterns. I mean, that shows you how old that truck was. But he'd done a number of things. He'd used that to wet down asphalt and all kinds of things. So he had a bunch of nozzles on the back. And, you know, they hired him at Westinghouse and GE to haul away the toxic chemicals. And, you know, when someone asked him what he did, he said, "I just drove." And that's what they did. They'd fill up there. They'd go out This was before even Lake Monroe, a lot of it, and just drive on the dirt country roads, and they'd get out where nobody was and turn the taps open and have, you know, their little tent sprinklers out, and he'd just drive until it was all gone. Then he'd go back and get another one. And he always did it at sundown. He always went, you know, second shift and drove all night. And that's, I mean, that stuff's all over this county because it was put there by, you know, the guys who paid probably peanuts to get rid of it.
That's a well-known technique of getting rid of liquid toxic waste that the FBI told me about when I worked up in Northwest Indiana there. And there's a bit much bigger game of it going on up there where they have actual big tanker, you know, 18-wheeler trucks. They just crack it open a little bit so there's a drip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not a noticeable drip.
Yeah.
And they drive for 1,000 miles and back, and by the time they get back, it's gone.
It's gone.
Yeah.
Well, this guy was just, I mean, it was like he was watering down, or he was oiling down dirt roads, only it was toxic chemicals.
Westinghouse admitted that they did, that they had done that. But nobody.
Oh, they did?
Oh, yeah. Nobody ever followed up on it. It was never followed up because they couldn't trace where it went.
No, I'm sure
they figured every road. It could have been on every road.
Well, my guess is it was. If there was a dark road in the middle of nowhere that nobody was traveling on, my guess is there's a good bet that you know, there's a bunch of it there.
And into Owen County and Brown County and Greene County and, you know, Lawrence County.
Yep.
And probably even Mooresville.
Probably even Mooresville, probably so.
Well, anyway.
Well, I was horrified. I never heard of that before. When that old man told me that, I was just horrified. And if he wouldn't have told me that he'd done it himself, I probably wouldn't have believed him. I was like just fairly naive, I guess.
Back in the day, I would have loved to have talked to him.
Oh, Lord, I'll bet you would have. Well, he was in having breakfast every morning at either Ladyman's or Southern Sporting Goods.
I used to go to Southern's every now and then, in fact. Robin Roberts used to hang out in there.
Oh, sure, yeah.
He was my dentist.
Yeah. I haven't seen Robin for a while.
Well, he's been retired for a long time.
I
used to run into him down at the Hoosier place in that little shopping mall where the IGA is out here. I saw him in there a few times, and I'm pretty sure he's an American Legion member and takes part in their color guard ceremonies.
I'll bet he does too, yeah.
I saw him not just a couple of years ago, I guess it's been.
Okay.
Seems relatively recently, but it wasn't really 2 years ago.
You know, that was a really animated crowd and Southern Sporting Goods in the morning. That, I mean, you couldn't have... Don, you could have made a living off of just writing about one character in there a year for the next 20 years. I mean, a book of character would have been, most people would have thought it would have been fiction books, but they weren't. And there were just some really interesting people.
We better locate that place for all the listeners who probably have no idea where Southern Sporting Goods was. It was on the square. It would have been on the east side of the square.
Yep.
And right next to the alley or?
I think it was right next to the alley. I think it's, you know what? I think it's where, you know, Malibu is now. Malibu is?
It could have been. It could have been there.
I can't remember exactly.
It looks so much different down there now. I can't really say. But I know it was on the east side of the square.
Yeah.
Set at the bar. Had those swiveling stools.
And they didn't really have a lot of food in there. I mean, they had torpedoes, which, you know, were some kind of donut with some sort of meat in it, I think. And that's what they called them. I never knew what was in them. I mean, everybody from, you know, the mayors, attorneys, IU coaches, the local homeless guys, old, you know, old rednecks. I mean, you couldn't put that group of people together in any other room in Bloomington for any reason.
Like, yeah, there was an unusual meeting ground of far right and far left.
It was.
And, everybody in between.
And I don't think we ever had a fatality in there, you know, which was, it wouldn't be that way today, but
yeah,
back then, you know, Lee Corso would come in, and Tommy was, you know, he wasn't homeless. I think he was in a disabled home, and he just kind of wandered around the city most of the day. He had a learning disability. He was not well, but he was a great IU fan, and he listened to the games on the radio because he carried his radio with him. And on Saturdays, he would listen to the IU football games. And every day, every Saturday, every Monday after the games were over, you know, a lot of times Corso would come in on Monday, probably his least busy day of the week, and he'd have breakfast or a cup of coffee in there. And Tommy would come in and bring him plays for next week's game. I mean, he would sit and diagram them on a napkin and, you know, just very seriously, very genuinely, you know, try to help Lee Corso, you know, win a football game next week by giving him secret plays. Just amazing stuff. Just stuff you just are not going to see a lot of places.
When you started talking about Tommy, I thought you were talking about Tommy Tarzan, but then I realized that was...
Oh, no. Yeah.
Say, by the way, it's, you know, the fishing was really doing well until this line of weather came through.
Yeah.
I haven't heard yet, but I suspect that it's going to be upset until it settles back down. I think we have a rain every other day this week, and they may get used to that even if it doesn't get too muddy.
Well, down and, into the 40s
fishing
every
has
night.
Been excellent so far this spring.
I know Mrs. B's hauling in pots of flowers right now, back indoors, because it's supposed to be 40 degrees tomorrow morning for the next two or three days. So I suspect that's probably not doing a lot for the fishing either.
Well, no, but it kind of delays things a little bit. We were looking at maybe an earlier spawn for the bluegills this year, but.
Oh.
Right now, it doesn't look that way.
Yeah.
Because this is at least a week they've been put off. They were starting to come up looking, you know.
Yeah.
You'd find them in 10 feet of water off of where they're going to bed.
Yeah.
Well, now I guess they've disappeared again. They've gone back to deeper water. They'll be back.
Well, last week when we had the windows open, you know, I heard a lot of and saw a lot of boats zipping by. On the lake, and of course I've heard nothing for a couple of days now. I mean, it's been pretty quiet. Even this weekend there was not much going on.
Well, it's springtime in Indiana, and boy, it has been a beautiful spring, and the dogwoods are still hanging on.
They are.
It's just amazing. Azaleas are still peaked out in some places.
What do you hear about mushrooms?
Well, you know, before this little weather change we had, there were people finding some here, finding some there, but I knew guys. Whoa, bless you, my
Excuse
friend.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I tried to get the mute button hit, but I couldn't get it.
Yeah, clean those nose hairs.
Clean the nose hairs. There you go.
Well, and then you'll have something to tie for your bait under your hook.
Right.
Yes, you will.
Bluegill fishing with, you know, and don't leave the wet parts out.
No.
The wet parts
in.
Give some little salt, you know.
Gotcha. Some little salt. That's good. There you go. Hey, now, listen, don't be giving away all these secrets, Don. I mean.
Well, there is only one secret. You can catch bluegills with belly button lint or a booger.
There you go. So everybody knows now.
Yeah, I guess so.
If you take those two and combine them together, you know, roll them between your fingers.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, and then you've got something you can put on the hook.
Yeah.
It gives it a little body.
It looks like a grub, I'm sure.
Yeah,
you know,
right. And has real taste.
<you know? laughs> Oh, that's good.
Right. I like Let's get one. Back to mushrooms. So am I going to find any still this year or not?
Yeah, possible.
Okay.
Possible. The big yellow ones are probably up.
Yeah.
And if you're going to go, you better go now because the forest floor is getting covered with green.
Right.
And when after that happens, it's really hard to find them.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, when the May apples leaf out, it's they cover a lot of.
They've been leafed out for a while.
Yeah.
So you know, there's a lot of stuff out there in the woods has greened.
Yep.
So get out there now.
Well, and we got another thing happening. I haven't heard them yet, but the cicadas, the brood eggs, are about ready to pop any day now. I think the cold weather's been keeping them away a little bit, but
I think so too, because I saw some initial activity and then nothing now.
Oh,
I've got a call in to the biology department, and I just got a reply today that I might have somebody next week that can talk about him.
Yeah, I'd love to hear that.
Well, I got a little story that I hadn't contacted the guy, but I've heard from him. Dr. Dale Miller, vet down in South Arlington, South.
Sure.
Has been finding unusually high numbers of Lyme disease, Rocky Mountain spotted fever, and two or three other Lyme or tick carried diseases in dogs and cats this spring.
Oh,
yeah. I'm not surprised.
So you got to watch your dogs and cats. I got a call into him. He said he would come on and Zoom with us, or somebody did anyway.
Oh, I'd love that.
And he's a personable guy. I've used him as a vet in the past, and he's a nice fellow.
Yeah.
So,
anyway, it'd be nice. Keep that in mind about your pets, because you bring them inside and they sleep in your bed, they might give you Lyme disease.
Right.
Yep.
So I hate to say spray your dog with DEET, but, you know, if you're going to let the dog run outside, it might be not a bad idea. He'll have other suggestions, I'm sure.
I just keep mine with the flea and tick medicine, but Advantix I use. But I don't know whether that would. I don't know if that makes it safe for you or not.
I don't know either.
Well, it keeps them from biting into the animal's skin, but it doesn't keep them off their coats. Like, you know, I have a Great Pyrenees, so it's got a big, thick coat. And while, you know, we don't see any ticks dug in on Miss Morgan, you know, they're all over a coat, and when you go pet her, they'll jump off onto you. So
right. And it's the little ones that carry the Lyme disease.
It is, yeah. The little
the ones that really hard for you to see at certain stages in their development, nearly microscopic.
Yep.
So you know, it's worth using caution.
If you do get bit, there's usually a red spot and then a circle around it. And the faster you can get treated, the better, because they do have, if you can get in there quickly enough, it's not as dangerous as if you just let it go. From what,
yeah,
what I've read.
Chronic Lyme disease is incurable.
Yeah.
It's essentially having third grade syphilis is what it is.
When you have
Lyme disease that has already embedded itself into your nervous system because it's went away, or it looks like it's went away from your skin. You know, many years later, that's essentially what you're dying of is syphilis. The mechanisms and the bacteria that cause it are essentially identical.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a spirochete, which
is
in the same family as syphilis.
And responds very well to simple modern antibiotics if you catch it during that first month.
Yeah, but if you let it go, you're going to have trouble the rest of your life.
Yeah,
and you don't know where it's going to pop up.
Yep.
So. Well, again, if you see that big circle around the bite, that's a pretty good telltale that you got a problem.
Yes, that's a certain, that's for sure. Not everybody gets the bullseye signal,
right?
But a lot of people do.
My daughter got Lyme disease when we lived at the farm in Ellettsville, and she had that big telltale bullseye rash right on her chest. She was a little bitty girl, and, you know, sure enough, I mean, it was, inch and a half wide and about in the size of a volleyball with a patch in the middle.
Yeah.
Wow.
Very telltale.
That's a big one.
It was a big rash, but it was, yeah, pretty classic. Pretty classic.
Well, you're almost lucky to see it.
Very lucky.
If you were to get a bite on your head, for example,
yeah,
you know, your chances of ever seeing that are pretty nil.
Well, and on my head, you can see it pretty easy, but on your tongue, they might never find it, you know.
Well, do you look at the top of your head very often?
It, no.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. And, no reason. There's nothing up there.
Well, in any case, then. Yeah. There are places where you might not see too often on your own body.
Yep.
Oh, and for sure.
Unless you have somebody to inspect you. So if you've been out in the woods and you don't have anybody to inspect you, get yourself a full-length mirror.
Yeah.
And maybe two of them so you could get angles, you know. You don't want to have any Lyme disease.
You do not.
And
it is spreading like wildfire. I mean, just from a national standpoint, I mean, you have a city named Lyme, Connecticut, essentially, you know, which it was named for, was like the focal point of it. And when we learned about, you know, Lyme's disease in pharmacy school, I mean, it was something, it was like, basically, if you drew a circle around where Boston Red Sox fans were, that's where Lyme disease was. And now it's all over.
Yeah, it's all over. It's all over. Lyme disease. Well, the alarming thing was that Rocky Mountain spotted fever was among the diseases that the vet found.
Yeah. Oh, I'll bet.
Dogs and cats coming to his office. And he said several other tick-borne diseases that we might not have heard of.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we need to chat. We need to hear from him. That would be.
Well, I'm trying. We'll get him here next week, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah, I hope so. And meanwhile, watch out for bears. They're out of their hibernation, and roaming wild in southern Indiana.
Well, watch out for bears. Watch out when you're in your little fishing skiff up near northern Indiana. Somebody fell out of their boat and drowned already. Had another ATV accident that killed somebody. So, I mean, we're getting into the season now, and, you know, the unfortunate consequences are starting to show up.
Oh, and speaking of getting killed, back during the turkey season, I wasn't here to report this, but there was an actual guy fell out of his tree stand while turkey hunting and killed himself. So now, what? You have to be careful in those tree stands.
You sure do.
Don't carry your arrows with you when you're going up and down. Primanently. They're sharp.
Yes.
They're sharp. They go right through you.
I don't arrow hunt or bow hunt, so I didn't know that, but I had not thought of that, but I'll bet that is very dangerous.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, you're not supposed to climb up there with your gun either, but I know guys.
Right. Yeah, I knew not to do that, but I just never would have thought about arrows. So that's even more dangerous, really.
Oh, absolutely. You know, you got those, those things are sharp, sharp, sharp.
Oh, yeah. Like razor blades.
Absolutely. You got the wrong end of that pointed at you. When you go down that tree, you're in trouble.
Oh, man.
You're in trouble. Well, and ATVs are the other life-threatening thing in the outdoors these days. There's been a few already this year. Most of them in northern Indiana, actually.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll catch up with them once we get out of the hospital from the virus.
Well, a week or two ago, I was over at Johnny's Junction in Judah, and there must have been 15 or 20 of them come pulling up to get gas. coming down the road. You know, I didn't think those things were allowed on the road, but there 15 of them, 10, 12, 15 of them, I don't know, all pulled up and started pumping gas into their ATVs. And, you know, they were still there pumping by the time I got my gas and left. So,
well, there's not that many policemen hanging around, Judah.
There must not be.
I'd say, you know, if you're going to have an ATV road run, that'd be as good a place as
that'd be the place to do it. Yeah.
To do it. I'd say so. You know, there's a lot of those little places down towards that area.
Oh, sure. And,
down towards Salem, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Out in the Wild and Woolies down there.
Yep.
There are, in fact, our ATV clubs, and they do, in fact, do road runs. And the police just seem to not pay any attention to it.
Well, I heard of an interesting place today that's sort of it's over near Nashville. It's kind of an ATV drive-in. Have you heard about this place?
No.
Yeah.
No.
So it's owned by the Big Woods people.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you can get beer and pizza and, you know, burgers there.
Back up the hill there where the rest of his Big Woods entertainment?
No, it's down by... It's down past the fairgrounds and the back entrance to the football field.
Oh, okay.
So it's back in there somewhere. I don't know exact location, but they told me that's where it was. And you can go back there and you can either drive your ATV yourself or you can rent one there and take their trails with their food. So I'll have the name for you next time we do this. But I thought that was fascinating.
Well, and speaking of next time, I got to tell us that we've got like about a little bit over a minute left. And I did want to say something. We lost a pretty important musician, someone who will be sorely missed in Bloomington, Slats Klug. I don't know if anybody knows him. But
oh, my. I know Slats real well. I got his Christmas album, yeah.
Slats passed away today, and
I did not know that.
It's kind of a shock for a lot of us, especially WFHB people really knew him well, and Brown in Monroe County, he was quite an amazing musician. So sorry to see Slats pass on to the next plane of existence, but he's gone.
Peace, Slats.
Yep. Well, anyway, here's a the very last few minutes. I really appreciate you guys coming on, and we've got some good weather coming up, but it's going to be cold for a little bit yet, so what can I say?
Yeah, watch your plants tonight.
You can have a good time indoors or outdoors or inside.
Inside, outdoors.
Inside, outdoors. Perfect.
See you guys.
All right. We'll see you guys later. And remember to get out there and do some fishing. It's just going to be about time here coming up soon. Once it gets a little warmer. All right. See you guys.
Bye.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, that's all we have time for today. Inside Outdoors comes to you from the beautiful rolling hills and green forests of southern Indiana. Thanks for listening. Inside Outdoors is brought to you each week on Saturday mornings at 7 a.m. right here on your local community radio station, WFHB. If you happen to miss the show, you can listen online at wfhb.org. Just go to the public affairs listing and you'll find a podcast of our show.